This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Wow, this is an exciting day for me. I get to talk about a subject that I love and to someone who is so impressive, but the subject that I love, of course, and all of my listeners know that I grew up in northern Michigan, and I lived a sort of wild child life in the forest. So I am so thrilled that I am able to welcome to Joy on Paper someone who loves lumber like I love lumber, Kevin Hancock. Thank you so much for joining me today, because I am just so impressed with you and your company.
Patsy, hello. I'm very happy to be with you.
Wow, this is a thrill, because, as you know, the smell of a sawmill, the fresh-cut lumber, is so beautiful. It is such an amazing smell, and I grew up with that smell. And every time I think about it, I get so thrilled, because I know what a wonder it is that we are able to take trees and make something gorgeous out of them. And yet there are ways to do it the right way. And your company, of course, is famous as being one of the best companies in the United States. So I'm just happy to have you here on the program to talk about this amazing book you've written, which is called 48 Whispers. And I love it. It is from Pine Ridge and the Northern Plains. So let's talk about that, and then we'll talk also perhaps about your business book.
Sure. Well, 48 Whispers chronicles a 10-year span of time in which I was traveling two or three times a year from my home in Maine to the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in the southwest corner of South Dakota, a place I've now been over two dozen times. And when I would go there, I would have my camera and my journal, and I just was so captured by the landscape, that part of the world, the power of nature there, the people on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation and their past and present story. And over time, I just got looking at what I'd written and what I'd photographed and decided it was something I wanted to share and put together in the book, 48 Whispers.
Well, I think it is just gorgeous. The photography is lovely, and then the words that go along with the picture are so heartfelt. Now, for people who don't know, this is the area of the Lakota tribe, and it's very funny. I have always discovered on this program that I have these strange and miraculous sort of golden threads of that run through the authors that I get to talk to on Joy on Paper. And one of them is the Lakota tribe. Now, of course, you can tell us something about them, but I will tell you that I'm writing a book, and in my book, I have one of the lead characters is a girl from the Lakota tribe. So it's fascinating that, you know, I've been working on that book, and I just was thrilled when I read this story.
Oh, what a coincidence. And yes, of course, you know, those tribes have a rich history and are filled with amazing people today. The Lakota are the westernmost band of tribes of the Sioux tribes, and I particularly have been visiting the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, which is home to the Oglala Sioux tribe. And what happened to me, my affinity really came from this. Back in 2010, I'd acquired a rare neurological voice disorder called spasmodic dysphonia that made speaking a bit difficult, and at the time, and then a couple years later, beginning in 2012, I started traveling to this remote reservation community, and there, among other things, I encountered an entire community that really didn't feel fully heard, that felt as if a piece of their authentic voice had been pushed to the side. So in the oddest of ways, I felt a real affinity for this community, and I've since become a real advocate for helping individuals and communities that feel like their voice has been marginalized, helping them come back into their own beautiful, authentic voice. And that's part of the mission of this book, 48 Whispers, what it aspires to do.
Well, it does, because I think one thing I want to tell people, this is a wonderful book to get for Thanksgiving gift. If you're going to somebody's house, and I hope people will be going to visit people this year for Thanksgiving, to bring this book, it is, first of all, the pictures are so lovely. So while you're waiting to eat that turkey, everybody will be enthralled with the photographs. But also the story of the Lakota, and about, there are so many things. As I said, one of my characters is a Lakota young woman who lands up in England. And so there's a big story behind that. And the tribes, what they suffered and what they went through is so terrible. And one of the worst things, of course, was the fact when the children were taken away and put in schools and taken away from their families, because Native American families are very strong.
No, they are. That's so true. And everything you speak of there, of course, has a real history to it. I have several friends, dear friends at Pine Ridge today, who are elders, who I feature in the book, and they all were sent as youngsters decades ago to these unforgiving, really harsh boarding schools to be, it's hard to say, but to be remade as white people. And that wasn't the covert goal of these schools, that was the overt goal. And I've thought a lot about what I can't possibly fully relate to, but what would it feel like to be remade, to have your country, your government, organize an effort to remake you into something that you're not, which these communities are still dealing with. And again, for me, that all goes back to helping people restore and reconnect with their authentic voices, and for us all to really remember the importance of honoring people where they are, as they are. Nothing has to change for you to be beautiful or amazing.
Exactly. And the photographs of them dancing, that is such a beautiful, beautiful photograph. I love that one. But there are just so many, one after another, of course, of the buffalo, of the beautiful, just a beautiful land. And, it's something, I think, what you're doing, trying to preserve the story and to help people understand where and how we should think about the West, and how we should think about, what was done and what we can do today to just make it better for the people who live there, and just to preserve it and to not destroy this beautiful, beautiful land.
Yes, right. So, well, sad. And in my travels to Pine Ridge, every trip I would take an extra day or two and move into the areas that surrounded the reservation, whether that was the Black Hills or over into Wyoming or up into the Dakotas. And what I was really struck by on these trips was the bigness of the place, the solitude of the place, and how one could really connect with one of the Sioux's the Sioux tribe's most fundamental understandings, which is that everything is connected. The Sioux use the phrase "mitakye oyasen," which translated means we are all brothers, or all things are one thing, or another way it's often explained simply is that the separateness we think we perceive is but an illusion. And when I was out alone in the wilderness, back to how you started your talk on this program, I really could feel that connectivity and oneness. And when I did, these sparks of inspiration or insight would come to me, which became the basis for the short muses or missives that I write and share in this book.
Well, you know, the Lakota, they had so many, when they have so many wonderful traditions and sort of concepts that are so life-affirming. And one of them, of course, is that they believe in, that there's, you know, dwells within us all something that's called the seventh power. And that I found fascinating.
Yeah, so did I. That was the title of my second book, and it was a theme I revisited many times in 48 Whispers. In the Sioux medicine wheel, which is their most sacred symbol, it represents the six great powers of the west, north, east, south, sky, and earth. But there are those at Pine Ridge today who know what the Sioux talk about as the old ways, which would have been the ways of the Sioux before the reservation era. And those people will tell you that at the center of that medicine wheel lives a seventh power. And that seventh power is you. It's me. It is the individual human spirit. And the progression of thought here is lovely. Everything in the natural world is sacred and holy and connected. And each human is a manifestation of that natural world, which therefore means that every human has a spark of the divine within them. And that's the seventh power. And the other thing I love about that concept, if you can picture or at some point look at a medicine wheel, is that seventh power lives at the center of the wheel. And so wherever you are on your life's journey, you are at the center of your universe, and you're surrounded by energy, but part of that sacred energy is within you.
Well, it's beautifully told in the stories and in the photographs, and I can see as I go through it, of course, the plains are, unless you've been out there, it's, you know, for city people, until they get someplace like that, they have no concept of how big the sky is. It's just like, the sky is so big out there.
No, and I think that's a really important part of what this book aspires to do. A central theme of this book is that our connectivity to nature, and the wisdom that comes with and from indigenous communities, those are not historical artifacts of the past. These are understandings and opportunities that are extremely powerful and relevant here in the present. And I really wanted to speak to this notion that in our fast-paced, urban, internet-wired, 24/7, bigger, better, more, go-go world, we've lost a bit of that connectivity to nature, which is, in essence, connectivity to ourselves, because we are not detached from nature. We're a manifestation of it. And getting back to wild places where we can just sit and be and experience that connectivity, I think, is a really important part of humanity's future, not just its past.
Well, your photographs are so spellbinding and so evocative. I have a feeling that people, when they look at these photographs, they go through this book, and people will go through it many times. It's a type of book that you'll read once, and then you'll leave on your table, and you'll go back to it and read again and look at the photographs. And I have a feeling people will want to say, yeah, we need to go out there. We need to see it for real. Is it so quite so amazing? And the important thing, you know, it is for people who haven't had the experience of living in nature and really living with trees. For me, it's living with trees. I grew up in northern Michigan, as I said. And the minute I got your book and I realized who you were, you know, the lumber business, as I said, is very dear to my heart. My father actually had a sawmill before I was born. And this is back in the late 50s. And he wanted to do a different type of logging. He loved trees so much, and he wanted to preserve them, and he wanted to do what is now being called, you know, sort of intelligent logging, taking care of the trees, taking care of the forests. And in northern Michigan, of course, the forests, even back in the 50s, were still magnificent. And of course, over the years, you know, they've done so much damage to them. But it's coming back, I think, because people have realized that the importance of it. But as I said, my father had a sawmill, and this was in the 50s, and it was a new business. And unfortunately, he had a partner. My father was the one who loved trees and loved lumber, and his partner was the one who loved money. And his partner ran off to Alaska. And in those days, that was before Alaska became a state. And you couldn't get people, you know, people that, I mean, that was where people who were bad people ran off to Alaska. And so he lost that business. And so he became actually a driver. He drove logging trucks, the trucks with the long, long logging trucks, and he drove those across from Michigan over, you know, across to Seattle, where they were shipped out. But so I was raised around trees, around lumber, and I love the smell of lumber. And somebody said to me one day, "Oh, well, that's terrible. You know, lumber's terrible. They cut down trees." I said, well, you know, if you're reading a book, you better be thankful, you know. So but lumber business is an amazing business, and you have created a company that it's exceptional. It has so many, the values of your company are known and taught by, you know, many, many, even universities talk about your wonderful company.
Well, I love your love of the forest. Yes, our company, Hancock Lumber, Maine, is first one of the oldest family businesses in America. It goes back to the 1840s. And when you work with nature as we do, it keeps you literally grounded and connected to the way nature works and flows. So, for example, the primary species of tree that grows on our land and we work with is the eastern white pine, and it takes 80 to 100 years to grow one. So in the 160-plus year history of our company, we've actually only seen two crop cycles. And as you say and speak about, the way we harvest and talk about harvesting is when we go into an area of timberland, we will cut a few of the mature trees. We will leave most of the trees, and with the space that's been created by the trees that are removed, the forest, of course, regenerates itself. And it's really a blessing to work with a material that is renewable, recyclable, and biodegradable, and completely sustainable. Of all the materials on Earth, I think the most environmentally healthy to work with is wood.
Is wood. It's wood. And, you know, one of my fondest memories, and I was very young at the time, my father was, you know, he didn't have his sawmill anymore, and he was now, he became a Teamster, and he was, you know, driving the trucks across the country. But he had friends who were still in the timber business, and they would ask him, they would say, they'd say, Al, come with us. Could you go take a walk and find us some bird's eye maple? And my father had this uncanny ability. You know, there are not that many, you know, bird's eye maple. They're rare. And they have a certain look. The tree has a certain look. I don't know if you have bird's eye maple in your area. Not many places have it.
We have some maple for sure. Our forests are a mix of beautiful mix of hardwood and softwood.
But you know, to harvest like the bird's eye maple, it is mostly that was sent in those days. To Italy, where they used to make fine furniture. Nowadays, of course, everybody has plastic furniture, so probably it's not as valuable. But back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, it was still valuable, quite valuable. And to find a bird's eye maple was really an exciting thing. So my father could walk through a forest, and there he would find a bird's eye maple. And I don't know if you've ever seen how they test for it. You know, you walk up to the tree, and you actually can't tell unless you go up a little ways and I guess hit it or something. And a young man jumped on my father's shoulders and climbed up to the right height to get the feel if the wood was in good, you know, the right thing. And that was so exciting. And to know, and that's why my father would have this love of trees. And he, you know, learning about wood, learning about trees is the wonderful, wonderful way to learn geography, because he would tell me about where this wood would go and that it would be shipped over to Italy, and they were going to make it into fine, you know, fine furniture, a veneer for fine furniture. So it was so exciting for me as a child, and just being around trees. And as I said, that's what I did as a kid. I was so happy. I feel so sorry for the kids today who have all these electronic things that they keep, you know, busy with, instead of going out in the woods and just having so much fun.
Right. And of course, nature in all its forms is so alluring and charming and literally grounding. But I do find it ironic that for me, growing up in the forest products industry living in a land filled with forests in Maine that I ended up becoming so fascinated with the largely treeless northern plains, and again, the diversity of landscape just within our own country is so amazing, and getting out to reconnect with nature has such regenerative benefits for us all.
Well, the photographs, of course, in this book really show the vastness and the emptiness of so much of the land. And 48 Whispers, I thought, was just a great name for the book, because it just tells these short little stories, little bits about the land, about the people. I liked particularly the one, the excerpt from Black Elk's Great Vision, and it goes, "And the oldest of the grandfathers spoke with a kind voice and said, 'Come right in and do not fear.' And as he spoke, all the horses of the four quarters neighed and to cheer me. So I went and stood before the six, and they looked older than men can ever be, old like hills, like stars." It's all of these, the words that you chose to go along with the pictures are really great.
Oh, I'm so happy you read that passage, Patsy. That was beautiful. Thank you.
Well, all of them. I love these stories. And I just, as I said, I hope that people will get this book and appreciate what you've put into it, because you have put your heart and soul into it, your love of I think just goodness. You've grown up in a company that has always had been more than just a company. You've been a caring company, a company that cares about your employees, and I think that's translated into your whole life, that you care. And having these wonderful excerpts that go along with the photographs, I just love it.
I'm so struck by that take on goodness, and I hadn't thought about the book with that theme running through it, but it does, and I would say that really is one way to talk about what the book is about, is the power of goodness. We're in a world that seems overwhelming with, at times, chaos and turmoil and loss and destruction and distrust, and yet that simple, universal power of goodness lives within us all, and it can still be transcendent, and we can all bring it forth in an instant. Every single human can bring goodness forth. It's such a powerful tool that we all have access to.
Exactly. And I think that your photographs will help people perhaps take that time. More and more, as we went through this pandemic, I kept telling people, just take time. Get away from all of it. Get away from the news, the electronics. Just go outside if you have a backyard. If you don't have a backyard, and if you're living in a city, there's always, like right now, we have a botanical garden near us. It's so beautiful. And you can go there and take a book and sit down and read and calm yourself down. I think people will find that they will be happier, because there's something about being out in nature, being out there, that just calms your whole body. It affects your heart, it affects your mind, and I think perhaps when people get this book, they will say, yeah, you know, that we need that quiet time. We need that time away from all of the stresses and find some peace. And knowing that, you know, at one time when the Lakota roamed and they had they had all this beauty around them, it touches your heart.
Yes, that's lovely, Patsy. And what you spoke to is one of the 48 topics that I wrote about in the book, and that essentially was this: the world in real life is more manageable than it is as viewed through a screen. And in that writing, I encourage people a bit more to turn the TV off, turn the computer off, put the phone away, and get out and immerse yourself in the world that's right beside you. The world on TV can feel overwhelming. The world right in front of you is almost always manageable, and often regenerative and power giving. And I think we can take control again of the energy that's around us by staying localized a bit more with our time and with our energy, and really looking at the world right beside us. And someone said once, if you read news once a week, you'd know as much as someone who read it every day. So it's not about staying aware. We need to stay aware, but we do not need to be overwhelmed by what's happening on a global basis. And this book's really a call for returning to that seventh power that lives within you, and getting out into the natural world is a great way to restore that power.
Exactly. And half of my childhood was spent in a hammock tied between two birch trees. Oh, wow. That was a glorious time.
Yeah, and I think, again, the other point is really reviving the idea that getting out in nature is not an old-fashioned event. You know, I think that when we think about the future of humanity, it is essential for us to re-strengthen our connectivity to the natural world that we're a part of, and through that connectivity, to really see the indwelling spirit that lives within us all, that seventh power. Each of us is a manifestation of the natural world. And as such, to the degree that nature is sacred and holy, so too is every individual human being.
Well, I agree, and I think that I would want to tell my listeners this book is wonderful. It's called 48 Whispers from Pine Ridge and the Northern Plains, and it's written and photographed by Kevin Hancock. And, you know, as I said, I'm so impressed by you, and I'm so impressed by your company. And I wanted to also mention to people that for anyone in any business, your other book, The Seventh Power, which is called The Seventh Power, One CEO's Journey into the Business of Shared Leadership, is a great, great, it's a business book, but it's also a book that really explains leadership. And whatever you're in, whatever business or whatever community service you do, leadership is the key. If you know how to be a leader, you can make changes and make life better for people. And I love what you write in in Whisper 14, I think it is, leadership restraint is about sharing power, not collecting it. And that's so important. And that's the theme that I think has controlled your life, your businesses, and this idea that a leader is someone who can share.
Yes, I'm so glad you spoke to that. Absolutely. That's become really my mission at work. It's to help people understand that leadership is about giving power to others. It's about strengthening the voices of others. It's not about collecting power to the center and putting all the voice in the hands of a few. That may be the old-fashioned historic model, but in the Aquarian age, that's not where we're trying to head. Leadership is about making other people's voices stronger and making it safe, creating community cultures where it's safe for people to be their authentic selves, because when people are their authentic selves, that's when they shine the brightest, and that's when they give the most to the world around them.
And in a company, that's when they're the best employees, when they feel that the boss is there for them and not just for themselves. It's a different kind of work environment.
It is. That's such an important point to make, too. Historically, really, spirituality and the place of work lived in separate corners. But I'm really trying to break down that stereotype and really bring spirit, bring sacredness back into the place of work and use the place of work to honor and celebrate the individual human spirit, not for the purpose of improving corporate performance. Corporate performance will improve when people make that culture shift, but that's really the outcome of a higher calling. Work really needs to be a place where adults feel safe to self-actualize, to come into their own voice. So we've really got to look, I believe, at business through a different lens and start to see its higher potential mission and purpose in the 21st century.
Exactly. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. The book is available, I know, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Is there a website for it? Or
yes, as well, there is. I have a personal website called The Business of Shared Leadership. .com, and both books you referenced are available there. The show will live there, and all kinds of other resources.
Well, that's great, because you know, it's just so important, I think, that people calm down. This is still, you know, we're still in a very difficult situation, and people need, I think people need to reach back into nature and to find some calmness, and they can do it with this book. And I again, Thanksgiving is coming up, and when you're getting ready to visit people, you know, bring this book or send them this book, because I think they will find a lot in this book that when they're reading it, they can be thankful for what they have. And hopefully they will then want to be better people, because I think it is an inspiring book.
I'm so happy, Patsy, that I had the opportunity to be on your show. Thank you for what you do to help strengthen the voices so many others, myself included. I appreciate you.
Well, the minute I heard there was a lumberman, because you know, when you grow up around lumberjacks as I did, they're special people, and I thought, well, this was meant to be. As I said, it's so funny that my book, which is a historical book, and has the main character is a Lakota woman, young woman, who lands up going to England after the Civil War. And so I was deeply involved with the entire, you know, understanding the Lakota tribe and all of the thing, all of that, exactly what's in your book. I knew these stories because I had been doing this research for quite a few years. And so between the Lakota and the lumber, doesn't fresh So lumber, doesn't it smell so good in a sawmill?
It sure does. We have coffee cups in our office that say, "I love the smell of sawdust in the morning."
Oh, I need one of those cups.
Send you one, because I'm also just so struck by all these pieces we have in common in terms of our upbringing, our love of the forest, and then our connection to writing about the Lakota Sioux. We just
and the funny thing is, and Hancock,
a little connection.
You know, where I lived, where I was raised, was near Hancock, Michigan. So also, when I saw your name, Hancock, I mean, I probably would have invited anyone named Hancock on the program, because that's where I was. I'm from, and
right.
So. Another connection that we have.
Famous line from the movie Jerry Maguire, "I had to hello, Patsy."
Well, you know, it's been a thrill to talk to you. And I, you know, if I ever get up to Maine, I need to come there. I need this. And that is a perfect cup. I mean, I tell you, the smell of sawdust. I even today, I just think about it all the time. And of course, it reminds me of my father, who was really, really dedicated. You know, he went through the Battle of the Bulge in World War II. And so he spent a lot of time in the forest. And he got to know all the trees over there. And he just loved, you know, we had this background. We had 80 acres of land, you know, from my grandparents. And so he loved trees, and he just raised me, always talking about, you know, that book you're reading, that book, you think of the tree, you know. He was always like that. And so I know that it's a special love that people who are around trees and around lumber have for nature.
Yeah, I'm really captured too by your affinity for your father and your upbringing and your memories, and 48 Whispers really speaks to that, as well as does my time at Pine Ridge. And the point is simply this, we all have a past, and that past wears on us in both loving and at times complex and challenging ways, but our past is something we always need to reconcile on the way to the future. And again, 48 Whispers is about taking that time to calm down, to be comfortable by yourself, to learn to listen to your own inner voice, and to come to understand how doing so in embedded in nature can really accelerate the power that lives within you.
Oh, so well said. Well, Kevin Hancock, thank you again for being on Joy on Paper. It has been an absolute joy to talk to you.
Thank you, Patsy. I loved it.
Okay. Well. Bye-bye now. Take care. Bye. Wow. What a guy. Isn't that fantastic? The book is wonderful. You It's just wonderful. I've spent, I don't know how much time. I get lost sometimes. I'm looking at the photographs and I'm looking, and it brings back memories and it brings me ideas. Okay, we have time. Let's do our commercials because I pushed them a little far, but let's go ahead and do commercials. We'll come back. Oh, let's do Jim Lamb. Oh, my goodness, I forgot. We have a wonderful, wonderful literary gem from Jim Lamb. Let's do that, and then we'll be back after a little while.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. That, my friend, is the way to open a novel. I'm Jim Lamb. Let's get started. Who knows what Charles Dickens was thinking when he penned his famous and memorable opening to A Tale of Two Cities. Whatever it was, he was right on. The only opening line more famous, and even older, is from the Torah. Barashit bara Elohim et hashamayim ve'et ha'eres. What does it mean? I'll give you a hint. In the beginning, God created. Well-crafted openings grab readers' attention and set up a great story. Let's take Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, for example. It is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife. If you're familiar with Austen's book, you know what a perfect setup that is. How about Anna Karenina by Leo Tolstoy? Happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. That, my friends, is a riddle wrapped up in an enigma with a side order of fries. French fries. One of my favorite books is George Orwell's 1984, so it must have a great opener. You bet your big brother's life it does. It was a bright, cold day in April, and the clocks were striking 13. Wait a minute. 12 is the highest number a clock can strike. Or is it? The Stranger by Albert Camus has a short and not very sweet opening. Here it is. Mother died today. Kind of odd, yet suitable in every way. And of course I gotta bring up Hemingway's Old Man and the Sea. I always do. He was a man who fished alone in a skiff in the Gulf Stream, and he had gone 84 days now without taking a fish. If you can find a better opening to a book written by a Nobel Prize-winning author, let me know. I'm Jim Lamb, and you've just learned a little something-something about opening lines.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
And I am back, and I have a few minutes. And again, I want to thank so much Kevin Hancock for joining me on Joy on Paper today, a lumberman, and I love lumbermen. Oh boy, I have so many lumberjack stories, I can tell. I should write them down one day because there is nothing like a lumberjack. They were special guys. And so I'm really thrilled about it. Again, I want to recommend to you, if you have a botanical garden in your area, go there. Go relax. Take a day off of all of the stress. Don't turn on any electronics, even the radio, except don't do that on Tuesday and Thursday because you have to listen to me. But other than that, go and just relax and read a book and think about the joys of life, which are really, it comes down to the beauty of the world, the beauty of the land around us, and of the people in your life, and appreciate them. And just wherever you can, you know, just get yourself outside a little bit. Go on a balcony, go to a park. I spent my whole, all of the years that I was homeschooling my boys, we spent most of our time, I would say, either on the beach or in a park. So they had really a very strange schoolrooms. I decided that was the best place. So that's what I did. And boy, I tell you, the one way to teach geometry is to go to the beach and just you know, make squares and rectangles and make them, measure them. And boy, the kids certainly learned geometry very quickly because that's the only way they'd get lunch. They'd have to have the measurements. I was very smart. I was a great homeschool mom. I really had all of these wonderful ideas. If you're homeschooling, enjoy it. Because once it's over, you'll miss it. I love those homeschooling days. I just wish I could live them over and over. You know, if I was doing one of those, Groundhog Days, mine would be homeschool days. Anyway, everybody, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. If you're very, very lucky to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I'm hoping for Carol J. Perry. You never know, and you won't unless you start writing. And NaNoWriMo is coming up, and start thinking about what book you're going to write in November. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed, and I salute him, and he salutes me, because I should have been a general. I would have been, oh, what a general I would have been. I would have been so good. My goodness, I wouldn't have had enough stars to put on my shoulder. I'd have been a 6-star general. Okay, everybody. Bye-bye.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.1.